Money FM 89.3, best of weekends.
Dane Chamorro is joining us from Washington, D.C. Dane is a partner for Global Risk and Intelligence at Control Risks in Washington, D.C. Dane, good morning. Welcome back to Singapore.
Hi, Glenn. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Great to have you on. And those of you who are watching and listening today, you may remember Dane and his amazingly talented wife, Andrea Kennedy, a decades-long residence of Singapore, just moved back to Washington last month or a month and a half ago. How's the move back been, Dane? Or should I be asking you that after this past week?
Actually, it was pretty smooth until Wednesday, which I think caught everybody by surprise, including us, including the Capitol Police, as we know.
Yeah.
It's been pretty smooth. Good to be back. I do miss Singapore. Some of the things you were talking about, Robinsons, etc., in your previous comments. But it's good to be here.
Yeah. Not much has changed since you left, just to let you know, except it's been raining almost nonstop since New Year's Day. But other than that, we're doing pretty much what we always do here in Singapore and just a little bit more of it. Dane, let's move right into what's happening. You know, we saw the violence. We saw the uncertainty now in the U.S. over these past few days. Donald Trump has come out and committed to a peaceful transfer of power on the 20th of January. But from Control Risk's point of view, what comes to mind as you looked at the last few days and you know, the possible problems and risks that might be out there for businesses, for individuals, people thinking about the U.S.?
Yeah, so it's a great question. I think it's important to separate the atmosphere and kind of the headline from the practical day-to-day. So I can tell you that as of Thursday, driving, moving around Washington, D.C., with the exception of key locations like the Capitol building, was completely normal. So that is the day after the event, right? Obviously, that day was very widely broadcast. Everybody knew that there was going to be, at a minimum, demonstrations, disturbance. The office was closed. Our office, which is about a block from the White House, was closed. It actually has been closed all week. Nobody expected that it would be the worst case scenario. Worst case scenario being A, five people lost their lives, including a Capitol Police officer.
Yeah.
B, the Capitol building was breached, which has never happened, I don't believe, any time before in history. It's been burned, but it's never been breached before.
Right.
So that was kind of worst case scenario. And of course, that makes headlines. I think what didn't make as many headlines is similar things, not quite as serious, happened in state capitals. Hmm. So, Glenn, you have a connection to Georgia, right?
Yeah.
Georgia just was in the process of electing two Democratic senators, right? So there was disturbances in Georgia. Were disturbances in Georgia. There were disturbances at the governor's mansion in the state of Washington. So the opposite coast, right? In fact, protesters occupied the governor's mansion in the state of Washington. So on the Pacific side of the United States.
Yeah.
In Kansas, in Minnesota, in a number of places. So it wasn't just Washington, D.C., even though that was the most kind of dramatic one. There were other places, right? So that's kind of the headline and the atmosphere. What it means on a day-to-day basis from a business perspective is, of course, you want to protect your assets. So if you have assets, people, including people, obviously, in these places, you want to make sure they're safe.
Yeah.
And that's why a number of businesses are closed or boarded up or whatever in Washington, D.C. and other places. But on a day-to-day basis, you know, when I'm out here walking around the city, you know, business continues as usual. It's only really impacted more or less by the pandemic, not by demonstrations or the possibility of demonstrations. So, you know, for example, a bit like Singapore used to be, you cannot eat inside in a restaurant in Washington, D.C., in theory, for another week. So it was open, and then it was shut for about 3 weeks. You cannot eat inside. You can eat outside, but you can't eat inside.
Yeah.
So those types of things are impacting day-to-day business. I think it's also important to keep in mind that, you know, the U.S. is a complex jurisdiction. It's actually 50 jurisdictions. It's not one. And my home state is California. It is arguably the most complex jurisdiction in terms of environment and labor and human rights and all kinds of things, right? Huge economy, but incredibly complex. What the United States has typically had in its favor is that it was transparent and it was predictable.
Yeah.
So even if you had complexity, you had a huge market, but you had transparency and predictability. What's been lost over the last 4 years at the national level is predictability. At the subnational level, i.e. at the state and county level, it's actually still pretty predictable. So you know, we know that California is a blue state. It has been for entire recent memory. It's pretty left of center, right? And so doing business in California is complex, but it is predictable in the sense that it's probably going to be a bit left of center. It's pretty transparent. And if it was an independent country, it would be the fifth largest economy in the world. Hmm. So people are still going to go and invest and do business in California, right? So it's just like we say to our clients at Control Risks about India or Brazil or Russia. It's particularly when you have a large federal structure. Yes, the national level stuff matters. But probably what matters most to you as a business is what happens at the subnational level, at your state, province, county level. That's probably more important on a day-to-day basis. So that's what you really have to get right.
Dane, though, we're speaking with Dane Chamorro of Control Risks in Washington, D.C. At the national level, though, we have trade policy, we have trade wars and trade spats and things like that, notably, obviously, China and the U.S. at the moment. So that, from a national perspective, has a great deal of impact on, for example, businesses here in Singapore and what may or may not be able to transpire transnationally, does it not?
No, absolutely. It does. So in certain sectors, as you mentioned, trade is a good one, intellectual property, other things. Those are, you know, all foreign policy. That's all at a national level. So, and that's where we've lost predictability in the last 4 years since President Trump was elected, right? On day two or day three, he withdrew from TPP, what was then called TPP, right? Which we'd spent a long time, a lot of hours, a lot of years negotiating with a lot of countries, right?
Yeah.
So that is where it's become unpredictable. And that is where, you know, if you're exposed to those sectors, if you're exposed to international trade, for example, and going forward, when President Biden takes office on the 20th of January, you can imagine that there are certain sectors that are going to be potentially more exposed to changes that he may bring in, particularly around things like climate, tax, the energy industry, financial services. There are going to be certain sectors that are going to be more exposed to the way things change, and those things will be changing over the next 12 months. So it's not an immediate thing. It takes time. But, you know, if you're in those sectors, it's already happening. We know it. You can feel it here. People are already reaching out to the prospective secretaries. That would be the equivalent of a minister in Singapore. And the people below them trying to understand what the agenda is to get as many benefits for their industry as they possibly can, right? That's traditional politics here. Every 4 years it changes, more or less. So that's already in process. The lobbyists are, you know, in the full force, reaching out to everybody in the in the Biden administration. Right,
the K Street bandits, huh? All of the lobbyists out there. And Dane, when you think about the rather historic moment that happened in the Georgia elections, the U.S. Senate runoffs. Now the Biden administration will control both houses of Congress, complete, you know, he can pretty much get through any legislation that he wants to get through. From a risk perspective, when you look at what you're going to be talking with your businesses about now, you just mentioned certain areas like climate and things. We know there's going to be some new regulations going in based on what we've heard from before from President-elect Biden. But is that a good thing or a bad thing or a neutral thing at this point? Or are you weighing in that way on that control of Congress by the Biden administration?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question. Certainly, it's probably better from a predictability perspective that you have both houses in control of one party, at least for 2 years until the next congressional elections and midterm elections. But it's a very narrow majority. Remember, actually, the Senate is split 50-50. And the only reason that the Democrats have a majority is because Kamala Harris, as vice president, can cast a tiebreaker.
Sure.
So it's a very soft majority. And just because you have a quote-unquote majority doesn't mean all of your party will necessarily vote, you know, for whatever you're putting forward,
right? Good point, yep.
And you still have to recruit – sometimes you still have to recruit people on the other side, depending on what it is. So what's been said, and I tend to think there's some credence in this, is that it tends to give moderates more leverage in this situation, right, in the Senate particularly, because anything that's going to be successful – has to appeal to enough of both sides, keeping in mind that these parties are not monolithic in terms of their ideologies. There are actually many parties under two, right? And so I tend to think that that's true. And so probably depending on what the issue is, depending on what the bill is, depending on what's at stake, yes, they have technically a slight majority, but it's going to be a toss-up probably every time. It doesn't matter whether you're talking about things like support, financial support, because of the pandemic, which we've been negotiated, and was negotiated back and forth between President Trump and Speaker Pelosi, or more contentious things like healthcare and energy. And remember, if you're a Democrat from Texas, energy is really important to you. It's probably more important to you. Those votes are probably more important to you than being a Democrat, right?
Yeah.
And that's just politics. So it's kind of each one is going to kind of, I suspect, and President Biden or future President Biden is a centrist, right? He comes from that part of the Democratic Party, and he was a senator for many, many decades. So he knows how he's got a lot of IOUs. He knows how people vote. He knows how people think. He knows how the system works, which is really important to make sure that you get things through. So that's probably the biggest advantage. Probably the biggest advantage for them right now is not that they have 50 seats. It's probably that they have somebody who really knows all of those people in the Senate, or most of them anyway, until he stepped down.
Yeah.
And how the system works and who needs what to get this bill or that bill over the line for a vote. That's probably actually their biggest advantage.
Dane, oftentimes when the inauguration time comes, businesses sit back and they kind of put things on hold for a little while, maybe the first quarter, just to see kind of what's going to happen, how things are going to shake down. You talked about the predictability factor that may be present now that maybe wasn't there in recent years based on the style of Biden versus Trump. But do you see that businesses, or will you be telling businesses, hey, you know, be a little bit cautious, be a little bit tentative in your decision making as it relates to the full year 2021 until we get more of a handle of what's going to actually happen with the Biden administration?
It's a great question. I think that most businesses from a strategic planning perspective will be waiting probably, and this is not just because of politics, it's also because of the pandemic, will probably be waiting until Q3 because
really that
the inauguration. Yeah, because even though the inauguration happens on the 20th of Jan, you still have an appointment process to go through for all of the secretaries. They have to be confirmed. You still have bills to draft. You still have all of these things that have to take place. And you still have to decide on what the agenda, you know, the actual specifics of the agenda, not the macro, not the 50,000 foot view, but the details, right?
Yeah.
And what will pass and what will not pass, because it's not just about what you want. It's what you can get passed and what you can get through. So you have that. And then you have the pandemic and the inoculation, the process of vaccination, which is going to take a while, right? I heard Dr. Fauci today on the radio, and he was saying, you know, by April, everybody who can want a vaccination will be able to get one. Okay, maybe. Maybe it will be June. Maybe it will be May. I don't know. But then you go into school holiday term, right? So if you think about it just psychologically, atmospherically, beyond all of the actual tactical issues, I suspect it will not be until then that businesses are able to say, and this won't be across the board, but in some cases, okay, I know what the environment looks like. For demand. I know what my demand is for my product, service, whatever, in North America, in the United States, based on all of these factors. Before that, I think it's really a toss-up as to what it's really going to look like because so many things could change. So I think but that type of unpredictability happens every cycle, pretty much, unless you have an administration that continues from the first term to the second term. So you had Bush twice, you had Clinton twice, then you have a degree of predictability.
Yeah.
But when you change, that cyclical unpredictability comes in every time. So businesses are kind of used to that, right? And they kind of, now obviously this was a spectacular year in so many different ways. It was really unique.
Sure.
Which of course just makes it harder for you to predict. If you're the corporate strategic planner, the corporate treasurer, if it was me, I'd be saying, yeah, let's wait 6 months until we see how all of this plays out and who's going to vote which way. And who's in what position and what cabinet department and how it might affect our business and what regulation may change. That's going to take some time to shake out.
Are there, based on your, you know, many, many years here in Asia, do you have any top level takeaways or giveaways to companies, either American companies or foreign companies here in Singapore or across ASEAN who are doing business with the U.S.? Any top line giveaways to them about what they should be looking for, aside from perhaps that stability factor in the next quarter or in the first half of the year?
So I think it's going to look more like it used to before 2016. Before the election of President Trump. So you've got a 4-year window who knows what happens after, you know, after in the 2024 election. Right. But it will revert to a kind of norm, if you will. But I'll go back to my original comment. And of course, the United States is still, depending on what sector you're in, the largest market in the world for whatever product or service, right?
Of course.
But I'll go back to my original comment, which is what really matters is what matters most is the subnational level. We tell our clients, they come to us and they say, we're going to start, we're going to invest in India. We're going to enter the market in India. And the first thing I say is, no, you're going to enter a state in India first, right? You're going to enter one place in India first, or maybe two, or maybe three if you're really aggressive. Mm. The country is way too diverse to say, I'm entering India. It'd be like saying, I'm entering the European Union. Yeah. No, well, you're probably going to start in Germany or Italy or the UK or somewhere else, right? The US is the same, right? You're going to start somewhere. So get that right first before you go, beyond that. Really understand that state particularly that you're going to be operating in, because some states are very business friendly. Some states like California, great, great opportunity, huge economy, but in many ways not business friendly. And that's my home state, and I'm saying that.
Yeah.
So get that part right first. The other stuff, depending again on what industry you're in, it's kind of a distraction, right? If you're in financial services, sure, that's federally regulated. But a lot of what you're going to do in the United States is not federally regulated. It's regulated at your state or, frankly, even your county level.
Right.
So you really have to understand that first.
Dane, great advice. Thank you so much. Dane Chamorro, partner of Global Risk and Intelligence at Control Risks in Washington. Really appreciate your time today. Great to see you again. Enjoy the next couple of weeks, I guess.
It'll be fun. It'll be interesting, that's for sure.
Hopefully we'll have you on again soon. Thanks, Dane.
Thanks, Glenn. Take care.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download the SBH radio app available on Google Play or the App Store.